An issue of guilt, he thought, had to rest on his own acceptance of the code of justice that pronounced him guilty. He did not accept it. He never had. His virtues, all the virtues she needed to achieve his punishment, came from another code and lived by another standard. He felt no guilt, no shame, no regret, no dishonor. He felt no concern for any verdict she chose to pass upon him. He had lost respect for her judgment long ago. And the sole chain still holding him was only a last remnant of pity. But what was the code on which she acted? What sort of code permitted the concept of a punishment that required the victim's own virtue as the fuel to make it work? A code, he thought, which would destroy only those who tried to observe it. A punishment from which only the honest would suffer, while the dishonest would escape unhurt. Could one conceive of an infamy lower than to equate virtue with pain? To make virtue, not vice, the source and motive power of suffering? If he were the kind of rotter she was struggling to make him believe he was, then no issue of his honor and his moral worth would matter to him. If he wasn't, then what was the nature of her attempt? To count upon his virtue and use it as an instrument of torture, to practice blackmail with the victim's generosity as sole means of extortion, to accept the gift of a man's goodwill and turn it into a tool for the giver's destruction. He sat very still, contemplating the formula of so monstrous an evil that he was able to name it, but not to believe it possible. He sat very still, held by the hammering of a single question. Did Lillian know the exact nature of her scheme? Was it a conscious policy devised with full awareness of its meaning? He shuddered. He did not hate her enough to believe it. He looked at her. She was absorbed at the moment in the task of cutting a plum pudding that stood as a mount of blue flame on a silver platter before her, its glow dancing over her face and her laughing mouth. She was plunging a silver knife into the flame with a practiced, graceful curve of her arm. She had metallic leaves in the red, golden, brown colors of autumn scattered over one shoulder of her black velvet gown. They glittered in the candlelight. He could not get rid of the impression, which he had kept receiving and rejecting for 3 months, that her vengeance was not a form of despair, as he had supposed, the impression which he regarded as inconceivable, that she was enjoying it. He could find no trace of pain in her manner. She had an air of confidence new to her. She seemed to be at home in her house for the first time. Even though everything within the house was of her own choice and taste, she had always seemed to act as the bright, efficient, resentful manager of a high-class hotel, who keeps smiling in bitter amusement at her position of inferiority to the owners. The amusement remained, but the bitterness was gone. She had not gained weight, but her features had lost their delicate sharpness in a blurring, softening look of satisfaction. Even her voice sounded as if it had grown plump. He did not hear what she was saying. She was laughing in the last flicker of the blue flames while he sat weighing the question. Did she know? He felt certain that he had discovered a secret much greater than the problem of his marriage, that he had grasped the formula of a policy practiced more widely throughout the world than he dared to contemplate at the moment. But to convict a human being of that practice was a verdict of irrevocable damnation, and he knew that he would not believe it of anyone so long as the possibility of a doubt remained. No, he thought, looking at Lillian with the last effort of his generosity, he would not believe it of her. In the name of whatever grace and pride she possessed, in the name of such moments when he had seen a smile of joy on her face, the smile of a living being, in the name of the brief shadow of love he had once felt for her, he would not pronounce upon her a verdict of total evil. The butler slipped a plate of plum pudding in front of him, and he heard Lillian's voice. Where have you been for the last 5 minutes, Henry? Or is it for the last century? You haven't answered me. You haven't heard a word I said. I heard it, he answered quietly. I don't know what you're trying to accomplish. What a question, said his mother. Isn't that just like a man? She's trying to save you from going to jail. That's what she's trying to accomplish. That could be true, he thought. Perhaps, by the reasoning of some crude, childish cowardice, The motive of their malice was a desire to protect him, to break him down into the safety of a compromise. It's possible, he thought, but knew that he did not believe it. You've always been unpopular, said Lillian, and it's more than a matter of any one particular issue. It's that unyielding, intractable attitude of yours. The men who are going to try you know what you're thinking. That's why they'll crack down on you, while they'd let another man off. Why, no. I don't know they know what I'm thinking. That's what I have to let them know tomorrow. Unless you show them that you're willing to give in and cooperate, you won't have a chance. You've been too hard to deal with.
No, I've been too easy.
But if they put you in jail, said his mother, what's going to happen to your family? Have you thought of that?
No, I haven't.
Have you thought of the disgrace you'll bring upon us?
Mother, do you understand the issue in this case?
No, I don't, and I don't want to understand. It's all dirty business and dirty politics.
All business is just dirty politics, and all politics is just dirty business. I never did want to understand any of it. I don't care who's right or wrong, but what I think a man ought to think of first is his family.
Don't you know what this will do to us?
No, Mother, I don't know or care.
His mother looked at him aghast.
Well, I think you have a very provincial attitude, all of you, said Philip suddenly. Nobody here seems to be concerned with the wider social aspects of the case. I don't agree with you, Lillian. I don't see why you say that they're pulling some sort of rotten trick on Henry and that he's in the right. I think he's guilty as hell.
Mother, I can explain the issue to you very simply. There's nothing unusual about it. The courts are full of cases of this kind. Businessmen are taking advantage of the national emergency in order to make money. They break the regulations which protect the common welfare of all, for the sake of their own personal gain. They're profiteers of the black market, who grow rich by defrauding the poor of their rightful share at a time of desperate shortage. They pursue a ruthless, grasping, grabbing antisocial policy based on nothing but plain selfish greed. It's no use pretending about it. We all know it, and I think it's contemptible.
He spoke in a careless, offhand manner, as if explaining the obvious to a group of adolescents. His tone conveyed the assurance of a man who knows that the moral ground of his stand is not open to question. Reardon sat looking at him, as if studying an object seen for the first time. Somewhere deep in Reardon's mind, as a steady, gentle, inexorable beat, was a man's voice, saying, "By what right? By what code? By what standard?"
"Philip," he said, not raising his voice, "say any of that again, and you will find yourself out in the street right now with the suit you've got on your back, with whatever change you've got in your pocket, and with nothing else."
He heard no answer, no sound, no movement. He noted that the stillness of the three before him had no element of astonishment. The look of shock on their faces was not the shock of people at a sudden explosion of a bomb, but the shock of people who had known that they were playing with a lighted fuse. There were no outcries, no protests, no questions. They knew that he meant it, and they knew everything it meant. A dim, sickening feeling told him that they had known it long before he did.
You wouldn't throw your own brother out on the street, would you?
His mother said at last. It was not a demand, but a plea.
I would.
But he's your brother. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
No.
Maybe he goes a bit too far at times, but it's just loose talk. It's just that modern jabber. He doesn't know what he's saying.
Then let him learn.
Don't be hard on him. He's younger than you and weaker. Henry, don't look at me that way. I've never seen you look like that. You shouldn't frighten him. You know that he needs you.
Does he know it?
You can't be hard on a man who needs you. It will prey on your conscience for the rest of your life.
It won't.
You've got to be kind, Henry.
I'm not.
You've got to have some pity.
I haven't.
A good man knows how to forgive.
I don't.
You wouldn't want me to think that you're selfish.
I am.